From the heart of Big Ten country, Los Angeles, California, Ryan Abraham and David Woods present the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Big Ten football. We are like a little way, more than halfway through, I think, our season previews.
Who knows, right?
There's so many teams. It's an infinite number of teams.
Yeah.
It never's going to end.
What's half of 18? Nobody knows.
In December,
it's impossible to say.
December will be halfway through. Maybe, I don't know. There's just so many teams. But we got some fun ones to talk about today. Nebraska and who are we doing? Maryland today. It's been a while. Yes. We're going to talk some Cornhuskers. I think 2 weeks, this will be the second week in a row where both teams are on USC's schedule. So I'm very interested to hear since I cover the Trojans and stuff. But we have Brian Christofferson here from Huskers 247. Brian, what's going on, man? How are you?
It's good to be here. You know, 17, 18 years ago when I started on the beat with Nebraska football, I obviously knew at some point I'd be talking about Nebraska, USC, and the Big Ten. That all put together.
Totally coherent narrative of history. Yeah. This is all normal. We shouldn't all worry about it. I got to start right here because I did a little bit of research before this because I had an inkling about this and then it was proven true. Nebraska might be the unluckiest program in America in the last 6 years. They've gone 7. If my math is right, 7-27 in games decided by 7 points or fewer since Scott Frost was hired in 2018. I don't know if that name is anathema, so apologies if I said it. What did Nebraska fans do? Did they anger some deity? How can they perform penance? What has gone wrong?
The word close is a bad word around here. You're not allowed to say it, actually. And it continued into the first year last year with Matt Rhule. And it was kind of tough for him because for that coaching staff, it's like, hey, this is our first year with this. We're just starting this building process. But they had all the attachments of the previous 5 to 6 years and all those close losses built up and all the angst that went with it within the fan base that was sort of piled on to their tough losses in the first season. So it was kind of difficult in that way. But, you know, you do make your own luck in this game. And one of the key stats that decides 3-4 point games is turnover margin. And if you look at Nebraska in that statistic, it's been, you know, the biggest letdown you could possibly imagine basically for 2 decades. I mean, since the turn of the century, I think Nebraska's maybe been in the plus category of turnover margin like 3 or 4 times, and last year they're minus 17. So sometimes people say, man, it's actually amazing they were in these close games when you consider what the turnover margin category looked like, because usually it'd be, you know, those would be 21 point losses.
Minus 17, yeah, that is not a good
ratio. That's not good. I think we can all agree.
The other thing not good, you know, this kind of goes along with what David was saying with the sort of the bad luck, maybe balls not bouncing Nebraska's way. No team of the Big Ten has had a longer bowl drought, 2016. We're bringing up all the fun stuff to start.
Yeah, this is how we really entice people to come back to the show. Just bring up pain.
Yeah, pain all the time. But, I mean, this looks like that's going to probably end this year. But it's had to be, you know, a tough kind of stretch here with a program that had so much tradition and not even be able to make the postseason for, you know, 8 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, it is amazing still to write that, you know, the last bowl appearance was the 2016 Music City Bowl. And probably the most remarkable thing is how the fan base has really stayed attached to the program throughout that. They've kept their sellout streak, which dates back to, you know, the early 1960s intact. And fans, I think their patience has been growing thin, but they've stuck with the program. Obviously, the Frost era was a disappointment that when it first began, nobody thought it could possibly go that bad. But there is renewed optimism around here right now with Matt Rhule. And we'll get into this, I'm sure. But a lot of that's his resume at Baylor and Temple. You know, he's built programs where in the second and third year, they really made significant jumps. So I don't think fans, even though last year kind of felt like deja vu all over again with those close losses, I think there was also that part of the brain that said, you know what, I'm going to trust this guy based off his resume that he's building something. And usually in that second year, you start to see that jump. So I would say cautious optimism is very much running laps around here, despite the fact of the bowl drought, which is amazing, though. I mean, it really is.
So let's talk about last year's team, because I think it's a really interesting team to look at. And it's kind of similar in many respects to a few other Big Ten teams. And in terms of style, it was, I mean, differentiate between, Nebraska's 123rd in offensive SP plus, but sixth in defensive, and differentiate that from Iowa last year. Like, very, very similar in terms of the statistical profile. How much confidence is there in Lincoln that they're going to be able to figure out that offensive side heading into this year with and talk about the quarterback situation? I mean, is it going to be Dylan Raiola? Is it going to be one of the more experienced? Yeah. Okay.
Let's just put it this way. People be stunned, I think, if it's not Dylan Raiola at this point. Heinrich Harburg started, half the season last year and is a junior who's also in the competition. But Dylan's had a very good offseason, has just put his head down and gone to work. I think even though he was a five-star quarterback recruit, he moved past that chapter in the book. You know, he knew that he had to earn the respect of his new teammates. He's been one of the first guys in, last guys out, all that sort of stuff. And he's just got a lot in the toolkit. Now, we know there's going to be bumps in the road in a freshman's, first year starting. There's going to be those games where some things go haywire. But he does have a poise about him and a maturity, I think, that is also built up from sort of being in the spotlight as a recruit basically since he was 15 years old. You know, he showed up at a Friday Night Lights recruiting event here one summer when he was 15 years old, and he throws a rope about 50 yards, in stride to a guy. And Nebraska fans, of course, his dad played here, was an unbelievable player. You know, they were in love, and, there were twists and turns in his recruiting process. But it kind of feels right that he's here now where his dad played, where his name's on the wall. And he's gone about it in a way that I think has gained the respect of all the older players. So I expect him to start. And, to the question of the offense, Dylan Raiola doesn't have to be Superman in year one if this defense can back up what they did last season. Now, they got to do that, but there's a lot of returning starters on that side of the ball. It was a top 10 outfit in most statistical categories. And if they can be similar to that, and as you mentioned, the offense was sort of like in the 120s in a lot of stats. Let's say the offense jumped to like 65th, and the defense kind of held up its end of the bargain from where it was. That in itself could be two or three wins if you fix the turnover margin. So I think that part is really attached to the optimism. It's like, we know it's going to be better because basically, it has to be better. There's no way you can go down from what it was on offense.
I want to stick with Raiola a little bit. I got to see him at the Polynesian Bowl out in Hawaii back in January, because those are the things I cover, Brian. I got to make sure, I used to go to San Antonio a lot. Like, I'm just going to go to Hawaii. That's better. There was a lot of buzz around him for sure. There's not a lot of five-star guys there. So you get someone like that, there's going to be a lot of attention. I felt like there's a thickness to him. Like, he's not like the tallest guy in the world, but it looks like he's someone that can take a pounding. What have you kind of seen from him so far since being on campus, and the kind of player you think he could potentially be for Nebraska?
Yeah, he's a sturdy kid. He's in that 220s to 225 range, might even be above that. I think what stood out, especially if you go to the spring game where he had all eyes on him, was actually some of the throws he didn't make. I mean, this is a game where everybody wants to see him make that spectacular play, where maybe you try to fit one in. And what was very notable about that scrimmage was there was a play like on a third down in the red zone where he could have thrown across his body and tried to squeeze, a throw in maybe for a 15-yard touchdown, but it just as easily could have been picked. He ends up running out of bounds. And it was like one of the first things Rhule praised, like in the post game talk, was, knowing when to settle too, and knowing when to not take that chance. And that was pretty impressive for a true freshman. So we'll see how it goes when the lights are really bright during the season. And the first big one will come September 7th, you know, when Colorado comes in here with all that, you know, noise and the hype that'll surround that game on NBC in prime time. But so far, a lot of the players have remarked that he's very difficult to bait into bad decisions, not just for a young quarterback, but for any quarterback. So that's probably been the most promising thing I've heard all offseason for an offense that turned the ball over 31 times a year ago, which, yes, that's true. 31 turnovers. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So he's obviously taken to heart. That's a stat they'd got to dramatically flip.
And then on the defensive side, you mentioned returning a bunch of production from last year. Also returning defensive coordinator Tony White, which was not a sure thing as recently as February. I know UCLA was heavily pursuing him for the head coaching job, but he returns to Lincoln after producing that, you know, top 10 defense we were talking about. What has he brought to the table at Nebraska? I know it's he comes from that Rocky Long tree of 3-3-5 defenses. What have you seen out of him, and how much of a value add is it to get him back for a second year?
Yeah, two unbelievable things for Nebraska football happened in December. There was the Riola flip from Georgia, and then Nebraska fans were watching closely, like, okay, UCLA's got an opening. He played there. It was obvious he was on their short list. Other schools were interested for good reason. Like, he has a good resume for what his defense does on the field, but also he's just got all the other tools as a coach, like when he gets up behind the podium and how he handles stuff. He's going to be a head coach one day. So I think Nebraska fans and the players know that they're on borrowed time, perhaps, with Tony White, because there is going to be that point where someone hires him for the HC position. But he did a remarkable job last year. I mean, first year with a new scheme, and to get a group that was top 10 in rushing defense, top 10 in yards, you know, per play, all this stuff. It was very impressive how quickly people bought into it. And it's a defense that it gives opposing quarterbacks and offenses a lot to chew on pre-snap, like right before it. You don't know exactly where certain things are coming from within the scheme. It's very bendable with how they can move the parts around, the number of down linemen they want to play with and all that stuff. And he's got a lot of super seniors returning on his defense too. He's got Isaac Gifford, who I think is one of the more underrated players in the country, back in the secondary. Nash Hutmaker, who's probably going to be one of the best, you know, nose tackles in this league, and Ty Robinson. Those are some guys who are fifth, 6 year college players who have been around the block, know what it's like to play through the grind of this league into November. So that's going to help him too. They return like 7 or 8 starters on that side of the ball. So the thought is they're going to be pretty good, but I also like that their approach is, last year was last year. We haven't done anything yet. It starts all over again.
2011, I believe it was, when Nebraska joined the Big Ten, four new teams coming into the league. You know, you've covered it the whole way. You know, Dave and I are covering teams that are joining the league. I don't know if you could go back, you know, back then and give the, you know, yourself some advice about how to cover the team or anyone else. Like, what are kind of some thoughts of who would you, well, the kind of advice you'd want to give to people coming into the conference now from stuff maybe you learned coming in a while ago?
You've probably heard this from other beat writers who have popped up within the league, but the thing I really underestimated was, you'll hear all the, okay, it's different in the trenches here. This is a, you know, like, there's just so many big people, and like getting not through October and November, the depth you have on your O-line and D-line. And you can kind of push that to the side a little bit. Nebraska was in a pretty good spot. You know, with Bo Pelini at that point when they entered the league, like they were a team that, you know, was basically near the top of the Big 12 coming in that first and second season. They won the conference. They won their division. It was the Legends and Leaders back then, is what they called it. Not my favorite name. That was a Jim Delaney thing. He did a lot of good things. I wouldn't say that name. Those names are at the top, but it was Legends and Leaders. And Nebraska won the Legends, if I remember, they were in the Legends, right, in 2012. And then they had a game against Wisconsin. Some people might vaguely remember this that are outside our bubble, where they lost 70-31 in the Big Ten championship.
I remember that.
Melvin Gordon ran around, you know, everywhere he wanted to, jet sweep. Nebraska couldn't stop it. And I think Nebraska's kind of been trying to recover since then. But back to my original point, I feel like Nebraska, it's taken a while for them to build up the depth they needed on the defensive and offensive line. And that's actually why people are kind of optimistic around here, is because the strength of this team on paper is actually the defensive line now. Matt Rhule's done a really good job of that. So I think my advice to teams incoming is you just got to bulk up for that. And you have to understand that some of these weather games, they're going to be ugly, and you're going to get people from the SEC tweeting about your games, some game in Iowa City that's, you know, 10-7 late in the third quarter and making fun of it. And you just got to kind of push it away and say, yeah, you play a game in 18 degree weather with 20 mile an hour winds. You just kind of have to adjust to some of those games that will come your way in November.
Good stuff. I like it.
I don't necessarily love hearing any of that. But
there's
only
like one or two of those a year. I mean, I don't want to act like it'll be nice until like there'll be a game though in November where you're like, what am I doing here? Why did this happen? Why did they switch league? What, you'll be asking yourself that.
All right. Let's talk about Nebraska's schedule. Because it's interesting. I would say it's on probably the lighter end for the Big Ten this year, because Nebraska avoids, if I have this right, all of Oregon, Penn State, and Michigan. So of the Big Four, only has to play Ohio State. It's on the road. But what's your sense of this schedule? Obviously, Colorado is one that I'm sure everyone is circling in the non-con. But what's your sense of this? What do you think, you know, what's an appropriate expectation for Nebraska fans?
I think early offseason, like before spring ball, there's a lot of talk like, okay, they got to get to 7 wins, you know, get it to 7 wins, get back to a bowl game. You get that sort of summer juice where people are like, no, look at that schedule. It's at least 8 wins. So I think there's a lot of that talk around here. Obviously this is a program who hasn't even been to a bowl game since 2016. So you have to be careful with that, but you're right. The schedule does open up the opportunity, but there are those games that Nebraska's got to prove they're in the upper middle of this league, first of all, before you can take your shot at the top. And that's those games against Illinois, at Indiana. Rutgers, I think, is going to be a solid outfit. That's not necessarily an easy out this year. Shiano's done a nice job kind of building up that team in the trenches. So there's like those 3 or 4 games Nebraska has right off the bat in league play where you can look at it and you don't really have to squint. You could say like, yeah, they could be 4-0 in the league. They could be at least 3-1. They should be, you kind of thing. But those are the games that Nebraska's got to settle into handling on a consistent basis, I think, to make that leap as a program where, okay, you've solidified yourself that you're like team 7-9 at least in this 18-team league. And now can you take the next step up for that? But first you got to get to that 7-9 category. And so those are huge games like late September, early October for this program.
And I put the schedule up if you're watching on YouTube. For whatever reason, I usually just Google like graphics for like an image for, you know, whoever, like Nebraska 2024 schedule. That was like the one program that didn't have like a good image. So this is just from our 247 thing. I just took a screenshot of it, but like
not showing off, not falling behind. There it is. Just the facts right there.
Yeah, I know. Maryland, like I find a lot of these, like there's around, like there's like Minnesota. I have all these ones, but Nebraska, I couldn't find anything good. So I wasn't going to make one. So I just, I guess I did make one, but it's pretty lame comparatively. But the interesting about this, the thing about this schedule, and we've talked about the divisions, obviously no more leaders and legends, but being in the Big Ten West, it's even more baffling that Nebraska hadn't made a bowl game for so long, because obviously the much weaker division, sometimes you see the teams that were like kind of bottom of the Big Ten West now, you're playing Penn State and Michigan and Ohio State. And that's not happening for it. So they're kind of getting eased into this bigger conference where you're not playing, you know, like Dave said, 3 of the top 4 big dogs, Nebraska doesn't have to play. It's a little surprising coming out of the West, I guess.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's sort of like they get one more year of kind of Big Ten West-ish type scheduling. And so you do have to take advantage of that without also – I think for a long time it was hard around here for Nebraska fans to adjust to the fact as the program dipped, like Illinois is like a street fight. Like that's going to be like a, almost an even affair. You got to really handle your business. You guys understand when you cover like a program that's been a blue blood, there's sort of this makeup in the fan base and stuff. Like, of course you're supposed to handle Northwestern or Purdue. Yeah. You know, there's kind of that thought. And Nebraska has been humbled enough that that schedule I talked about earlier, those 3-4 games. I mean, I think a lot of fans now don't take for granted that those are wins. They want to see it with their own eyes before they just go crowing about we're going to do this and that. But there definitely is at first glance of Nebraska's schedule, the idea, and I've seen it from other people. I don't say it, but like, yeah, they could potentially get to 7-0 if Ryle is really solid and their defense is top 10 defense. I mean, they would honestly probably be favored right now, I bet, in all seven of those first yeah. games before they get to Ohio State. So there is that opportunity.
We have a question in our chat on YouTube from Colt. He asks, after Riley, Frost, and one season of Rhule, what is the fan base's feelings on Bo Pelini? Any chance that that relationship will ever get mended?
I don't know if Bo is interested in mending it himself, you know, and coming back here. I don't know where his feelings are at. I haven't seen him do interviews with Nebraska media for a long time. I do think there's more respect for what he accomplished in his 7 years. It was going back to that period, it was probably a point where both sides were kind of ready to split ways, you know, honestly. But when you look at his track record, that was a time period where they were winning 9 or 10 consistently, but people are frustrated because they could never quite win the conference championship. So they always had 4 losses. And there was still, I think, some 1990s thinking attached to sort of those seasons. Like, why can't they get over the hump, you know, and be like that 12-2 kind of team? And now as people look back on it, they probably have a different lens, I would say, of it.
Where does Nebraska stand in the NIL world? Obviously, the sport we've covered for a long time has changed quite a bit. Seems like there's a lot of buy-in. Obviously, you know, it's the program the entire state kind of gets behind. But what's been the sort of landscape of NIL for Nebraska football?
I think they're really competitive and above most. But then you see like Oregon or Ohio State, and you know that there's another level to it that you still have to reach that you're not at. It's not quite a level playing field. But certainly they can be really competitive with some players like that. Rhule definitely does not build like, I mean, they use it to their advantage. Don't get me wrong, but he doesn't publicly build it up as like, we're going to get players here because of this sort of thing. I mean, they know they need it, but I think they want to build up a roster of guys who, you know, first and foremost, you really want to play for Nebraska. And if you take care of business, there are great opportunities NIL wise here, because it is like the rock show in the state. It's the pro team. So, if you take off as a starter or a guy who makes a big play in a game that decides it, you're going to get that stuff naturally. So I think that's always something you can put in front of recruits. Like, you want to get a taste of like what it's like to have like a team that's covered like a pro team, which it is around here. I mean, there's like 40 media members sometimes at a event. Here it is. Like, everybody on this team gets written about in the off season at some point, like 100 some guys. Like, it feels like a story on each guy. So that's the way it's covered. And they use that to their advantage, I think, to entice guys. Like, you'll get your chance here.
Real quick, David, when this first came out, my initial thought was always like, NIL at a place like Nebraska, like the starting right guard could get like a car dealership deal. And like, it could be really good for anyone that's going to play on the team. Any starter is probably going to get something, where like for USC or UCLA, like, you might have a better deal if you're the star quarterback, but no one knows who the center is. They don't really care. Like, he's not going to get the same kind of, you know, like, you know, real, what we would say a real NIL deal is, not just like pay for play kind of thing. Has it kind of been that way? Like, if you're a starter on the team, like, someone's going to give you some kind of good deal.
I think there are really good opportunities that probably aren't other places. It's one of those, you guys know this. It's like, it's such an important thing for every university. And then sometimes it's hard to get your arms around exactly who's getting what or what it is, like, to get into the specifics. But there's no question that the attention you get as an athlete here is significant, that there's going to be those opportunities. 1890 Nebraska is the collective that works very closely with the university, as attached to them at this point. And I think they do work very well. There's just, as you know, there's like a few schools that are at that very top platform. Then, and I wouldn't say Nebraska's there yet, but I think they're pretty respectable to the field if you take it most of the teams across the country.
Last one for me, and it's an important question, I think, seemingly from the YouTube. It's from Market X. Is Dave looking forward to trying the Runza when he goes to Lincoln in November? Please describe to me what a Runza is and whether a intrepid visitor from, say, California would enjoy it.
Yeah, you give it a shot. It's I'd get it like in a I'd go inside a Runza and get it in a nice air conditioned spot, and not if it's like a game where it's like 92 degrees. I used to work at Runza when I was in high school, so I'll vouch for it. I could.
So Runza is both a type of food and a chain.
Yeah, it's a sandwich. It's like cabbage. It's very heavily breaded. It's got cabbage and beef in it. And Nebraskans will defend its honor. Nebraskans will also defend chili and cinnamon rolls as a combination. It's very popular around here. Uh-huh. So that's something that we care about, and we'll fight. We'll get our boxing gloves on if someone wants to take a shot at that. But yeah, you should definitely try a Runza. And of course, get here on a Friday night if your team's playing in Lincoln, and figure out the top steakhouses in Omaha or Lincoln, and it'll match up pretty well with about anybody.
Perfect.
Hayden had a comment in the chat. Nebraska's floor is 7-5, and that's with a lot of Royola growing pains. Ceiling, I'm going 11-1 if he shows the poise we believe he has and doesn't have the, quote, freshman moment. This team can go far. Any thoughts on that one, Brian?
I'm like in the 8-win category. I mean, I have them like at 8 wins. That's what I'd say. They're one of those teams where if you wanted to seem like a really smart guy in August and just take a shot on a flyer, like, that could get into the playoff, I think they're one of those teams you could throw out there because of their schedule and stuff. I'm not predicting it myself, but I mean, if you're like, I want to be show that I have somebody different than the usual suspects, and this team that had a losing season last year, you could throw them out there as like this year's Washington, and I think make an argument behind it. So I get what he's saying there. I have them at like 8-4. That's what my prediction is right now.
Yeah, I did the game by game, and I've got them at 8-4.
Yeah, that seems pretty reasonable. I mean, with, you know, the way we've seen Matt Rhule build teams, not being in a bowl game for a long time. 8-4 would be a marked improvement, especially with a freshman quarterback, and then a lot of optimism heading into 2025 and beyond. So, you can follow him on Twitter, Husker247BC. Brian, thanks again for coming on, man. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, I enjoyed being on. Look forward to seeing you guys in person.
Yeah, right. Absolutely. Thanks,
man. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. All right, we're going from Nebraska football. They haven't made a bowl game since 2016, which is crazy. We got to talk Maryland.
Which has been to 3 straight bowl games.
One of 3 straight bowl games. It's great. Do we have audio there? Jeff, are you there? Oh, we don't have his audio for some reason. You know what?
Did you mute him?
Of course I muted him, because
this is the same thing you did last week.
Well, because... Okay, I'm doing all this stuff on the fly. Jeff, sorry about that. How you doing, man?
All good. I'm good. I'm good. We're all adjusting to this new landscape. We'll blame that on the, transition to the Big Ten, right?
Big Ten landscape is changing. I did set up the shot while everything else was going on, but I forgot to unmute Jeff. But Jeff does a great job covering the Terps. Yeah, like 3 straight bowl wins and being in the tougher division. That's what's even weirder about the Nebraska thing. You're in the easier division. You can't make a bowl. Maryland's been clawing and scratching and making bowl games, but losing the, all-time passing leader in the Big Ten, that's going to be tough. I don't know. What are your overall expectations looking into this, new season, which looks like it'll be a lot of changes for Maryland?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it feels like Taulia Tagovailoa was the starter there for the past 10 years. So now, you know, this is, you're finally having an open quarterback competition. You don't have a proven commodity there. And on the offensive line, you're replacing your whole starting unit. So that's the other big question. So, you know, elsewhere on the team, I think that they have probably the highest overall talent level and experience they've had in quite a while. So the potential is there to be really good for once. They don't have to play Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan. They're only playing one of those three, so that should help them out. Flip side is those two positions I mentioned are probably the two most important on the field. So there's a wide range of outcomes, I would say.
Mike Locksley has obviously, I think, done a tremendous job there, kind of pulling them out of what was a pretty bad era for Maryland football. And now the last 3 years, what's the general sense in the fan base of the job he's done? And just, you know, is there a general sense of like satisfaction, like happiness, or is there, you know, we want more out of this? And just kind of what's the general opinion of him?
No, I think there's an overwhelm. You know, his approval rating is really high right now. There was a point midway through last season after they got off to that undefeated start, you know, 5-0, and then you lose all these games in a row, and people were grumbling. But then they turned it around. Nebraska, coincidentally, was one of the big wins down the stretch that got them back to bowl eligibility. So once that happened, that turned around, and now with this really strong recruiting cycle they're having, you don't hear too many negative things about Mike Locksley right now.
I asked Brian about this earlier with the NIL situation. Maybe similar, maybe not exactly the same, but, you know, Oregon is one of those teams that's just been crushing it in the NIL world with Nike and Phil Knight. Maryland, you know, has something along those lines with Under Armour. Where sort of Maryland fallen into the NIL space, and has, you know, the backing of Under Armour been a big part of that?
I would say it's helped, but it not as big as people might assume, and nowhere near the same level as Oregon and Nike, not even in that same stratosphere. But it does seem like they have stepped up their NIL budget this year. They've raised more money, so they're more competitive now. But obviously, when you talk about the Ohio States and Michigans and those schools, they're still a ways off from having those kinds of resources.
In terms of competitive standing, just the overall program, you know, we were talking to Nebraska, and obviously there's some, I think, mixed feelings about moving to the Big Ten with that move. Maryland came a little bit later, but I think it was roughly the same time, it was maybe a year later. Is it still pretty positive about going to the Big Ten? Are there some in the fan base who wish you'd stayed in the ACC? I mean, probably not now with the ACC right. Soon blowing up. But I mean, has that been an ongoing conversation, or is it generally, you know, happy to be in the Big Ten?
There's still a little bit of lingering resentment from some fans. It's usually the older group, as you would expect, the people who watch them in the ACC battle with North Carolina and Duke and Virginia for decade after decade. And then also the other aspect there is that in the Big Ten, they have no natural rivalry. So it's fun watching the games, but if you don't have any sort of, you know, historical rival or even regional, which Penn State could potentially be if Maryland could beat them more regularly. But so I think there's definitely a little bit of resentment or a little bit of disinterest over that. But for the most part, I think people have really moved along now. It's been 10 years, unbelievably. So for the most part, it's natural, but you still hear a little bit of, you know, I wish we were still in the ACC, especially for basketball.
10 years. Yeah, crazy. With the transfer portal and all that, like, who were some of the, like, big additions that the Terps added this offseason? Did they, you know, how hard did they hit the portal? Was it a big, you know, were their priorities? And, like, how did you think they did overall acquiring new talent?
I think they did pretty well. Last year, maybe a little bit better. They did get several key additions. There's a kid, Jalen Husky, a cornerback from Bowling Green. He was all conference in the MAC. They really needed cornerbacks. They've lost three of them to the NFL in the past 2 years. Didn't have really anybody proven coming back there. They really like him. And then on the offensive line, another big guy, or another key guy, is Alan Heron. He came from Shorter University. It's a Division II school, I believe. I don't think it's even FCS in Georgia, small school. Originally committed to Penn State, Maryland flipped him on signing day, so he'll be one of the starters at tackle, which, you know, if he's capable, that's huge for them, because as I mentioned, you know, they lost the entire starting unit and don't have a lot of proven commodities there.
So at quarterback, is this competition still kind of wide open at this point? And who do you anticipate coming out on top?
I think it's pretty open. And if it's not, Mike Locksley's not going to let us know. You know, that's kind of how he learned that from Nick Saban. He's gotten increasingly secretive about things like that and injuries over time. But, you know, from what you talk to people inside the team, they think it's pretty open. Whereas, you know, the public assumption, I would say, is that MJ Morris, the transfer from Georgia Tech, or excuse me, from NC State, is the guy just because he has a higher profile. He's a 4-star. I think he went 3-1 there in the games that he started. Whereas Billy Edwards, he's a veteran, tough guy. Everybody on the team loves him. You know, from everything I've gathered, he's like the most highly respected leader on the team. But there's questions about his arm, whether he can make all the throws. You know, I think he was 6 out of 20 in the bowl game. They still crushed Auburn, but, you know, it wasn't a pretty line. So it's mostly between those two. Cam Edge is a guy with a big, younger guy with a big arm, who's pretty much, you know, an unknown at this point, kind of a wild card. They do like some things about him, but right now it still seems at least publicly open between Morris and Edwards.
As a conference, you know, there's a lot better. You know, the elite defenses kind of outnumber the elite offenses. Now, Maryland's been able to put up some points, but where's Maryland right now on the defensive side of the ball? Because you think there could be, you know, taking a step back offensively. Is there opportunities to take steps forward defensively?
Yeah, I think the defense is a clear strength. I mean, they do have some really good playmakers on offense. You know, Roman Hemby has nearly rushed for 1,000 yards 2 years ago. He's a big, you know, he's a home run hitter. They got good players at receivers, tight end, all that. But again, you need the offensive line and the quarterback for those to work. Defensively, though, outside of that situation, that cornerback, where, as I mentioned, they don't have any proven guys coming back, I think the defensive line is deeper and probably better than it's been, you know, maybe since Ralph Friesen in the early 2000s. Really veteran, strong linebacker unit, two strong safeties, Dante Trader, who was the starter last year, and then Glenn Miller, who was arguably their most reliable defensive back. So I think defense has a chance to be better than it's been there in a while.
So looking at the schedule for this year, I mean, it's probably, I would say, middling based on what we've seen in terms of the Big Ten conference schedule. You do have to play, Maryland has to play Oregon and Penn State, but avoids Michigan and Ohio State, obviously. What's your sense of this with kind of the issues on the offensive line, obviously getting a new quarterback in there? What's your sense of what does success look like with this schedule, and what are kind of the games that you're circling that might kind of be the bellwether games?
Yeah, I mean, it should open up pretty strong for them. When you look at that first half of the schedule, I think they should be favored in 5 or 6 of those games. If you lose any less than, say, 4 or 5 of those, that's probably not setting you up for great success when it gets a lot harder in the second half. You know, I would say the Michigan State kind of looks like a potential toss-up early on. They should be favored in that one. Trip to Virginia could be has a potential to be a landmine, but mostly I think, you know, it's a matter of just taking care of business in those first 6 and then just getting that one big upset, which that's what's really eluded them the past few years. You know, they've won bowl games the past 3 years, first time that's ever happened in the program's history, but they keep having these close calls. Ohio State, they had 2 of them where they took them down to the final few minutes. Michigan State, they had 2 where they also were, you know, just a few plays away from beating them each of the past 2 years, you know, which I think says something about the improved, you know, quality of Maryland's program, that they can go down to the wire with an eventual national champion. That wasn't the case 5 years ago. But, you know, that's what's eluded them, is that big marquee signature win. So if they can take care of the ones you're supposed to win, just get that one big upset, whether it's Oregon or Penn State or whoever it might be, or USC, we'll see, you know, what the kind of the point spread looks like by that point in the season, then that would be taking the next step for them to where, you know, you're not just beating who you should be, you're also proving you can beat some of the marquee teams.
I was going to ask you about that because I'll be out there. My sister lives in Alexandria, Virginia, which is not very far away from College Park, I believe. So I think I can, I'm going to stay with her and drive out there. But one of my writers, Chris Trevino, he's a proud Maryland grad.
Yeah.
So he's really looking for, you know, he's going to have a bunch of people out for that game. But, you know, USC 7-5 last year. It's a jersey, though. I mean, it's a name brand school. They just haven't been, you know, 2 years ago, they were pretty good, but last year, not so much. For a team like Maryland, not having to play someone like that, is that like a game that you're that people are going to circle because it's like, hey, USC's coming to town, even though, you know, they weren't that good that last year.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's the first time the two schools have ever played. So obviously the first time USC has come to town. And regardless of whether they weren't, you know, great last year, they're still one of the biggest national brands, as you guys know very well. And so I think, and Caleb Williams being there last year obviously adds a little bit of sizzle to that. So, and it's homecoming on top of that. So I think it will be kind of an event in College Park, just like when Oregon comes to town. This year, Maryland actually goes out to Oregon. But yeah, I think, you know, a lot of people will have that one circled because it's the Trojans on your home field. And that's just not something that has ever happened before.
I got to, because it's Maryland and I cover UCLA, we got to talk a little bit about basketball. Because football gets a little sad sometimes, and we don't like to talk about that too much. But in basketball, you guys hired Kevin Willard a couple years ago and seemed to be doing really well that first season. I thought they played UCLA, and it was a rough one, but seemed to be, you know, doing the right things. Last season, a bit of a step back. What's kind of Maryland's position in basketball? And yeah, I would imagine that's probably an area where people do regret the move from the ACC to the Big Ten, at least in the fan base. But what's your sense of the job he's done?
Like you said, the first year was excellent. You know, nobody was picking them to go to the tournament. I think they were picked 11th maybe in the Big Ten, and it wasn't an 18-team conference at that point. So it got to the tournament, won a game, beat West Virginia. So that was a great first year. Last year was a pretty big disappointment. They just couldn't shoot, essentially. They shot, I think, 27% from three. They were either worst or second worst nationally among power conference teams in three-point shooting. So that just submarined their entire season. They lost Jameer Young, who's their star point guard for the past 2 years. It's a huge loss, but they did bring in a solid transfer class and a five-star center, Derek Queen, one of the top centers in the country. He was the MVP of the McDonald's All-American game. He looks really good. I saw him recently in practice. He should be an immediate impact guy. So, you know, there are some nice pieces for this year, but also, you know, kind of like the football scenario with questions at quarterback and on the offensive line, this new point guard they brought in from Belmont, Jacoby Gillespie, can he be somewhere in that Jameer Young range? And can some of these other guys, you know, improve upon last year? Because last year was, you know, it was a bad year for them. They just had a bad season.
Oh, we can't finish on basketball talk, but this was like, where's the?
I love that. Hey, I'm from Maryland. It's all about basketball.
So that's right, buddy.
We did. Well, that's the UCLA thing. Actually, Market X had a comment in here on the chat. I'll read it. There's similarities. Says Maryland's a good blueprint for UCLA. They also came in the Big Ten with a ridiculous amount of debt tied to the athletic department. I don't know if that's true or if that was.
That's 1,000,000% true. That's the reason they took the offer. They were drowning in red ink at the time. Big Ten, obviously, you know, the revenue share annually at the time was probably two times the ACC. Now it's more than that. I mean, you know, at the time, everybody was angry. Not everybody, but a lot of the fans were angry about the move. People who don't necessarily want to accept that it's a business, you know. But now, looking back, that was a lifeline. I mean, there are many schools in these power conferences, you know, that would kill to be in their position in the Big Ten. So looking back, it was a godsend for them, but it was largely financially motivated. And also Maryland's a very good academic school, so they liked the fact that the Big Ten's academic profile is so strong.
All right. Well, good stuff. Anything else, David?
No, I was just going to echo. That's basically UCLA's story in a nutshell. You know, I don't think they would have accepted it unless they were drowning in debt, which they are. So.
So here we are.
Here we are.
So we end on basketball and debt. You know? Perfect. That's right on brand. Jeff, we appreciate you coming on and hanging with and everything. We'll look forward to talking to you out throughout the season as we, because as you know, we are in the heart of Big Ten country here in Los Angeles, California.
And as he is.
Yes.
Yes. In Maryland.
DC very area. Folksy Midwestern kind of vibe there, right?
Yeah. 100%. Well, we're all in the heartland, you know? Not coastal. No.
People kind of got mad at me. I was at the played my beach volleyball league the other night, Tuesday night. Beautiful sunset in Hermosa Beach. I took a picture and tweeted out Big Ten country, and people were not. Some people loved it. Then other people were like, screw you.
They're going to have to get used to it whether they like it or not.
Right. That's right.
Jeff, thanks so much, man. Take care. We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, I'll see you guys in College Park.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Good. All right. Good stuff there. Learning about Nebraska and Maryland.
Great stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was fun. And we continue apace. I think by my last count, by our, we tried to align the stars. We tried to use a sextant to figure it out. I think we have six more teams that we need to do.
You want to name them real quick?
Yeah, real quick. Purdue, Northwestern.
Yes.
Iowa.
Uh-huh.
Michigan State.
Uh-huh.
Penn State.
And Wisconsin.
And Wisconsin.
Yeah. But this is like four teams in a row that USC is playing. So that's kind of good for me just to get a little feel. I think the general vibe is there's like a lot of teams that are like improving, you know, like they're just getting better. Like Nebraska should be markedly better than they were last year. Now, Maryland, maybe not, you know, maybe not. We'll see. But they've been consistently good and chance of staying good, you know.
So Maryland, I would be surprised if they didn't take a slight step back.
Yeah.
You don't replace your entire offensive line and it's just like, hey, we're
and
a good, yeah. I mean, they're quarterback and offensive line. Those are key positions. but I like the job Mike Loxley's done. I think if they can maintain as a bowl team, that would maintain momentum. Nebraska should be a lot better. They
have to be.
They return a ton. Like they return a lot on offense and a lot on defense. And they're bringing in a much more talented quarterback, even if he is inexperienced, than what they had before.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be quite a bit better. But I think there's also
Rutgers will probably be better. You know, there's like
so this is where I pump the brakes a little bit because some of this is just preseason. You know.
Yeah.
Everyone's getting better in the preseason because we're all talking to the coaches, and coaches are optimists by nature. They're all saying, "Yeah, we're going to be better." But who knows?
UCLA probably be much better, you know, like
see, exactly. I wouldn't go there. I wouldn't say that necessarily. So I think there's potential for a lot of teams. I don't think there's anyone that we've talked to so far that I'm like, oh God, they're gonna be out and out bad. So we'll see. I mean, we haven't talked to Northwestern or Purdue yet. So we'll see what they have to say about their programs.
Yeah.
But
Northwestern was way better than anyone thought they would have been last year.
Yeah, but that's the story of Northwestern football is nobody can explain it. Nobody has any idea why, but every year they seem to be doing better than they should.
Yeah.
Somebody did a curse on Nebraska and doled out their wins to Iowa and Northwestern.
Maybe.
Because Iowa has the exact same statistical profile as Nebraska last year, but they went 10-4.
Yeah. No, that's
inexplicable.
It could be like that whole, what was it, the cow that started a barn fire or whatever for the Cubs. Was that there was some curse for the Cubs. It was like, yeah.
No, Tom Osborne did something like unthinkable in like 1998. And since then, Nebraska's just, you know.
The Bo Pelini thing was pretty funny because like 9-10 wins a year, you stink. And then you're like, oh, okay, well, don't make a bowl for 8 straight years and see what happens.
Which was it, Bill Callahan or Callahan? What was his
Callahan.
Name? Callahan.
I believe so, yeah.
I'm surprised Nebraska fans, maybe we should have asked Brian about this. I'm surprised Nebraska fans don't make a bigger thing out of that. Like just cold turkey, we're going to the West Coast offense and it's going to be a friggin' disaster as like the genesis of everything.
That's tough because it's like Nebraska's like the college pro, like college is college can be, and then we're going to get an NFL guy. It's like, that's a tougher.
Yeah.
Like if you're like UCLA, it's like, okay, it's like there's pro. I mean, it's a lot more pro looking.
What I'd love to know is the teams that were like traditionally triple options of various, makes and models. But all that remains are basically the service academies and Georgia Tech running like traditional. And Georgia Tech's probably not even doing it anymore. Pretty much the service academies. And I'm just, what if Nebraska just kept doing it?
You were saying like Oklahoma State, Oregon State should have done it.
Yeah, but like what if like a team that recruits as well as Nebraska had just kept doing that? Would they have been fine? I think they would have.
Probably.
But like, I don't know. Everyone gets into the rat race of like innovating and all this kind of stuff. And I guess it's, maybe it's harder to train guys to do it. But when you're in a state like Nebraska, like, can't you, as the university where like literally everyone in the state is a fan of your program, make it so that every high school program in the state also runs the exact same offense you run?
So you get to, yeah.
So that you just continuously generate, you know, triple option talent.
They had a tremendous walk-on program. I think they were actually the first, if I remember correctly, the first like major program that had like a strength and conditioning actual program.
Well, as Carl Durrell implied in 2005, maybe, they had some steroids.
There was a little, there might have been some of that. But they would also
– Actually, I think that's a direct quote from Carl Durrell.
The walk-on program, you know, they would get like their fullbacks from like some farm somewhere. Like I think the way that their brand of football, you could get dudes that weren't the most skilled players in the world but, you know, bigger. And,
well, that's
you know.
The story of a lot of Big Ten programs. Like you get these huge, you know, the classic corn-fed, you know, bodies to play on your offensive line. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's been some missteps in that program, to put it mildly. It's just, I think we're going to learn more as we, you know, go deeper into the seasons with the Nebraska fan base. But I got my eye on that one as like a fan base that really appeals to our Pac-12 listenership, because I think they've got some pain behind those eyes. Oh, yeah,
there's some pain.
Yeah.
I mean, no bowl game for so long. Market X says, Nebraska went to the West Coast offense with Callahan, and Michigan went to the spread with Rich Rod, set them back at least a decade.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And I wonder how much of it is just that stylistic change, because, you know, Michigan now running something, I mean, quote unquote pro style, but definitely smash mouth, has certainly had more success. And, you know, Nebraska, you know, the option worked for so long. So, I don't know. I mean, it's all, you know, bygone days now, but,
I mean, programs do have a DNA. Like there's a persona, there's something, you know, underlining that's just like, it's hard to change that. And I feel like Michigan does feel more like we're going to, you know, smash mouth football, but we can throw the ball and stuff, but it's not a big spread. Like Rich Rod, I don't know how well that would necessarily work there. You want to be able to be physical and push people around. And I feel like for Nebraska, you kind of have to do something similar. You know, if they just tried to, you know, four wides all the time and hurry up and stuff, it just doesn't seem like it's part of the DNA. Not that it can't work, but like playing closer to what you're, you know, the sport has evolved. It's changed so much just in the last few years. But you still could play like closer to what like your, I don't say core, I guess core values of a program.
Well, it's also based on like what can you recruit? What is local to you?
Yeah.
And how do you, you know, and all of that. And I think, you know, the reason why it worked for Nebraska so long is because what they were able to recruit fit that model.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think it's an interesting program for sure, with the historical standing and where it is now.
Real quick, I know Jeff's audio was a little low, and if we were adding him first, we might have been able to fix it at the beginning. I was trying to fix it on the fly, so I'm sorry if that was a little low. If you listen to the podcast, I should be able to fix that, but if it's on the video, we've tried to keep these audio levels, but we're bringing people from different sources. That was tough, so sorry about that. And also let you know, if you want to send us a question, we got a few questions in. Big10cast@gmail.com is the email address, or you can call or text us at 424-532-0678 and tweeting at us at B1G Podcast. And then, of course, the Apple Podcasting app. You could leave us a 5-star rating there and a review. We love it very much. I don't know if we have any new ones, David.
We have no new ones. People have let us down. Our new listeners from many of these Big Ten schools, they've decided they're not going to participate in our charade. Whatever you want to call it, they're not going to participate. But I'm going to give everyone the rules. The rules are very simple. Give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, and no matter what the text says, it can be full of insults. It can be, these guys know nothing about Big Ten football. They're the worst human beings I've ever listened to. I actually hope they both die. That's a threat. But that's fine. We're not going to report it. And that can go in our review, and we will read it on air. no matter what it is, if it's a five-star review. Okay? Those are your marching orders. All right. We've got questions, though.
Yeah.
You want some questions? I got Frank in Sacramento. You want that?
Let's see. Do we got Frank? Yeah, let's listen to Frank.
The Big Ten stunk on offense in, he wrote 29-23, but unless Frank is a traveler from the future, I'm going to assume he meant 2023.
He's like beyond Buck Rogers.
Yeah, hell yeah, buddy. I know you guys won't look at the attached charts, as he got that right, but the Big Ten stunk in every category on offense last year, and the quarterback play is projected to be terrible this year. In all, 18 teams attended Big Ten Media Days, each bringing three of their best players. Out of those 54 players, only five of them were quarterbacks. The second attached chart shows that the Big Ten was very good on defense in 2023. Yep. So true. Well said. Yeah. So I don't
when
know.
You're bad on offense, it's easier to be good on defense.
Right? Yeah. Well, and also say, I don't know that your assessment of quarterback play in the league is necessarily scientific, but it feels anecdotally true to me. That quarterback play in the league has generally been subpar and probably won't be great again. I think it's a we just heard from Nebraska, which gives me some pause on my theory of the case, because Nebraska, Brian told us that whole thing about, the size on the defensive and offensive lines and how it wears on you. Yeah, that's actually real. It's not fake.
Yeah.
Which as like a recent explorer to the region, you know, it's like, the scene in Shogun where the English guy washes up on shore and it's like he's met with a foreign land. But then the Portuguese guy shows up and he talks to him in Portuguese and they understand each other. I felt like that from the Nebraska guy. Like he'd been there for about a decade. He knows what's up and he's trying to tell us before we make the same mistakes he did. I'm going to make the same mistake. I don't know whether it's bad quarterback play that's causing this. I think it's a little bit of, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I don't know that the defenses are necessarily all that good, or if it's also that the offenses are just quite bad. Because I've seen a lot of Big Ten quarterbacks throw a football, and I'm not sure every time I see it whether it's the first time they've thrown a football. So... I think it's a little bit of both. I think it's in both buckets. I think there is some truth to the line play being, significantly deeper and better. And then also the quarterbacks being much worse.
The quarterbacks matter a lot in our sport. It
is interesting. Yeah.
Like the Pac-12 best year in a long, long time. Lo and behold, you had a ton of awesome quarterbacks. I mean, a 7-5 team had a Heisman Trophy winner on it. You had Bo Nix and Michael Penix and Shador Sanders. I mean, just you go down, like there's the big, like no other conference had those kind of guys stacked up one on top of another. And the Big Ten really was lacking there where and their best teams like weren't relying on quarterback play. Ohio State's quarterback transferred. Just left, It's like, okay.
Yeah.
They get a bunch of new dudes in. So I would say the quarterback play was pretty bad last year in general.
I agree. I'm going to read the next question. You hit that button that turns the air conditioning on.
Oh, I'll do that. Okay, yeah. Hold on. Here, I'm going to put things on you. Go ahead. All right.
I'm going to read from Oxnard Steve. Forever in my heart, podcast of Champions Family. Absolutely loved the recent podcast featuring the Michigan Cheaterines, the Minnesota Golden Goofers, the Zodiac Killer, and others. Hearing about Minnesota's perennial also-rans from a reporter who does not take himself or the team he covers too seriously was hilarious. It was far more interesting than hearing about how poor old Michigan now has to get used to life without players, coaches, Connor Stallions, and nameless cheerleaders who have all moved on to different pastures following a so-called championship year. I will say the Michigan beat reporter did a fine job. It's not his fault that he has to deal with issues beyond his control. Ryan and David can attest to that, considering what they've covered with their respective programs in recent years. I will say I do love the combination of From the Heart of Big Ten Country and Forever in More Homes Than the Pac-12 Network. Both statements are the absolute truth. The podcast of champions will forever be in my heart, and so will the listeners, callers, guests, and the mediocre hosts. Keep it coming and fight on. Oxnard Steve.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. When we tweet this out, there's some people that aren't happy, because Wildcat Dave,
Yeah.
He tweeted a meme that says, oh, fuck off. So that was
okay, but unhappy. I've got okay, if you're an Arizona fan or a Wildcat, I've got a great idea. You know what there is in our league? Our new league, Big Ten? There's another set of Wildcats.
Oh, yeah.
Northwestern.
Could be a fan of them.
You can be a Northwestern Wildcat. You got to change colors a little bit, but you can just say, go Wildcats, and it's fine. And then just adopt them as your team. And it'll be like rooting for Kevin Sumlin era Arizona. But that's fine. You did that for 3-4 years, right? This will be fine. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
I like it. We were talking quarterbacks. Market X is like crushing our chat. We love it. He says, I know Tom Brady and Drew Brees played in this conference, but between Kerry Collins and Dwayne Haskins, the Big Ten has zero first-round picks at quarterback. A few more since Dwayne, but only from Ohio State or Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, I think it's a lot of things, but also, I mean, it's first, a lot of quarterbacks come from down south or out west because it's easier to throw a football year round.
It's warm.
Yeah. And second, I'm not sure how many of them who even do live there want to stay there and throw a football in ice cold conditions in November and late October.
Yeah. You know, and part of the reason, if you're the Big Ten and you're adding the initial ad with USC and UCLA, the whole like breaking into different markets as far as recruiting goes, there is still, you know, I think California has dropped off for bigger bodies talent wise. I mean, the, you know, we're seeing more 7-on-7 stuff than like real college football. I mean, real high school football. There's more, I mean, I guess political backlash about playing football like in California than maybe in the South, but there's still a ton of great quarterbacks and you can get a lot of talent out of here. So if you're the Big Ten, you're like, okay, we're going to, if we have LA in our market, a lot of those Southern California talented quarterbacks that maybe were, if they're not going to West Coast schools, are they going to the SEC, Big 12? Okay, well, maybe they'll come to the Big Ten now. And I think that's part of, you know, part of the reason why you'd want to reach out. It could be a pipeline to improve overall quarterback play in a conference that's not, you know, it's not been stellar.
Yeah, I think that's right. All right, we've got our next one from Crispy Bruin. Want me to read it?
I can do this one. That's fine.
Sure.
Serious college football question. Hey, David and Ryan, if he shows up. If I show up.
Yeah, wow.
You know who took the last vacation? Who was in Maui? Not me. It was David. So just so you know.
Where were you this weekend?
I went to Catalina. That's like one
That's
night.
That's fake. That's not even real, right?
That's 26 miles away.
It's an island that I went to and I stayed at for a night.
One night, fishing and camping. Like,
yeah.
Is that vacation? Like, I wasn't Maui. I was going fishing. I like
how the definition has changed. Like,
my lunch today was fish I caught on that. So I was providing.
It was a work trip.
I was providing food
for my family. It was akin to a trip to the grocery store.
It was like that, except the fish that I caught, I put in the air fryer, and it was very yummy. I put do you like sriracha mayo?
Yeah, I like all kind of spicy mayos.
Yeah, I put that on my – I just lightly breaded the fillets. They're like a white fish. These were like rockfish.
Uh-huh.
Lightly salt and pepper, breadcrumbs, air fryer, and I put some sriracha mayo on it. It was pretty darn good. So
sounds great.
I liked it, yeah. So I was, yes.
You didn't
I
make
was,
me any.
It was basically like going to the grocery store. It wasn't vacation. I wasn't in Maui like you.
You didn't make me any.
I did not. I've made you fish before.
You have. And you didn't make me any this time. Has our relationship fallen apart so badly?
No, I have more in the, actually, because you're like vacation time now, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, I have salmon and halibut and link cod in my freezer from my Canada fishing trip.
Damn.
And that's awesome. So I've. That was the first time I ever made anything like raw with the salmon. So I did like poke and like spicy salmon, and it was good. So yeah, if you want to come over, I'll make you some stuff.
Hell yeah, let's go.
Okay. He says, Crispy Bruin's like, hi, David, and Ryan, if he shows up. I had the unpleasant experience of hearing your first Big Ten cast while on a boat in Barcelona.
Barcelona.
I've since been engaged in a withering boycott. Wasn't upset about the new teams. Frankly, who cares if the three Cal football fans are mad that you don't cover their persistent mediocrity? My true concern was how intently and sincerely you discussed the football intricacies of something called a Rutgers. In doing so, you lost the heart of what powers the POC, nonsense topics tangentially related to football. If you listened last week, we got into that. Dave, the Star Spangled Banner has had a good run as an anthem, but has certainly been surpassed by the canon of other patriotic music, particularly as played before a football game. Which song would you replace it with and why? I'm partial to the Battle Hymn of the Republic, but how would it fare in an anthem in modern secular society with its overt references to capital G God? And should it be stylized to fit the atmosphere of a sporting event? Keep it weird, Crispy Bruin.
Great question that I can sink my teeth into. No more of this football bullshit.
We went off the rails. Was it last week?
Yeah.
Who did we talk to?
We went off the rails with Minnesota.
Minnesota. You should listen to that one, Crispy Bro. Yeah. There was no football almost at all.
All right. So Star Spangled Banner, I disagree that it's had a good run. It's an unsingable song.
It's so good.
It's
though.
A poem that never should have been set to music. And Francis Scott Key really sucked. So here's what you have. You've got basically nothing good written in a patriotic vein since 1865. But the Civil War is a rich treasure trove of patriotic music. And it's all about the really cool shit we did, which is, you know, freeing the slaves. So Battle Hymn of the Republic. He's right. You got overt God. It's mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He had trampled out the vintage. And it's overt, you know, God imagery. But it's also, when you like look at the lyrics, it's super metal. And it's all about a just and wrathful God basically smiting slaveholders. So that's cool. And I think even I would call myself a cultural Catholic, but very much an atheist. I can get behind that.
Okay.
That's fine. A little bit of God. Like, I mean, it's not like we're escaping God with the Star Spangled Banner or God Bless America.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's written in the stupid Constitution or not, it's a Protestant country. You got to kind of deal with it. All right. Two, beyond Battle Hymn of the Republic, you've also got some other bangers. Now, my preference is probably what I'll discuss next, which is Battle Cry of Freedom. This is the one that goes, yes, we'll rally around the flag, boys, we'll rally once again, shouting the battle cry of freedom.
Oh, yeah. You did not prepare for this, right? This is just off the top of your head.
Off the top of my head.
Yeah. That's
but I was considering this recently. This is a common Twitter topic of mine, so it wouldn't be surprising.
So is that why where Crispy Bird got it from?
Okay. Maybe.
Okay.
But Battle Cry of Freedom, it's a great song. Very patriotic, no overt references to any sort of deity. And again, all about kicking the shit out of slaveholders. Right.
Okay. So those are all good.
Yeah. Then, and this is if you really want to go badass and just make it all about just kicking the shit out of slaveholders, is Marching Through Georgia.
Is it like the Sherman?
Yeah.
Okay.
While we were marching through Georgia, hurrah, hurrah, we'll bring the Jubilee. Hurrah, hurrah, the song makes me free. Yeah, it's great. It's a great song. And you can do that, and it can be arranged in a lot of different ways. All of these songs are actual songs, so they can be arranged differently. Like, you can have up-tempo. You can have a banjo version. You can have a folky version. You can have a fun upbeat. You can have a slow downbeat. You can do it in all different ways. The Star Spangled Banner can only be sung one way, horribly. And if it's sung any different way, people get really upset about it because it sounds different, and also because it sounds bad, because there's no good way to sing that because it's not actually a song.
Okay. My one counter to that would be, I believe it was 1991, Super Bowl, Whitney Houston absolutely crushing that the national anthem.
Okay, but here's the thing. Whitney Houston crushed everything that came out of her voice because she actually had the voice of an angel.
Yes.
Right? So, yes, if you get literally the best singer of all time, yeah, they'll probably sing it pretty well. But if you don't literally get that, you're screwed. Like, you could sing Battle Hymn of the Republic. It's like one beat and cadence the whole way through.
Yeah.
You don't have to figure out, and the rocket's red glare, and like figure out how long to carry that note at the end.
Yeah.
No. You don't have to do that.
It is weird that the song that's like one of the hardest to sing around is like the one we have all these different people sing at a bunch of different, like you got like the most people, there's probably more people have sung that song than almost anything. And it's like the hardest one to do.
Yeah. There's also a union version of Dixie, you know, the song Dixie, the Southern Confederate anthem. I wish I was in Dixie away. There's a union version of that, which is basically like the first diss track ever made in like 1862. And it's basically just we're going to stomp out these rebel traitors.
Ah.
And it's very good, too. But I do think, and this is just a general thing, theming a lot more of this stuff around the Civil War rather than the American Revolution would be better. Just generally and ideologically, like it's as far as like good things that the United States has done, whining about taxes and then fighting a revolution to not have to pay them anymore is not as cool as fighting a war to
free slavery,
you know, free millions and millions of people from bondage.
Gotcha. Matthew in the chat said, pregame song for my Bruins. Empty chairs at empty tables.
Oh, yeah. Let's get some Les Mis going. I mean, Do You Hear the People Sing should be everyone's national anthem. But yes. Oh, we got lots of good stuff.
We did have, let's see, Dave. That was the last question, right? In the chat, Dave says, I've already reviewed your 5-star on Apple Podcasts. Is there another platform to rate you 5 stars on? You can't do it on Spotify, but I think you can leave another review.
Oh, we got one more question, actually, in email, too.
Oh, we do have one more?
Yeah, I don't think you can write a review anywhere else besides Apple Podcasts.
I think you can do 5-star. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. And then we got one that how about buying DDW a Bruins backdrop?
Yeah, how about you do that, Ryan? After all the money I invested in the studio, the least you could do is
for the record,
provide
me
a backdrop.
This is I paid for all this studio crap. Like, this is what I do, and he just comes here. And if he wants to bring a UCLA backdrop or a Big Ten, he can do whatever he wants, but I'm not buying one for him. This is on your boy, DDW.
This is far funnier. It's far funnier than anything I would bring in. So I think 100%.
He does move the USC helmet.
I do that, and I also accidentally broke one of his bobbleheads one time.
Yeah, he broke Caleb Williams' bobblehead.
Accidentally. Yeah,
but if you're seeing the overhead shot, if you're watching on YouTube now, you can see the USC helmet signed by a bunch of legends and stuff that he moves away.
Yeah, I move it out of my way every time.
Right.
Yeah.
But the backdrop is there, and he's welcome to bring something else. Like, I would, you know.
Should I bring a Civil War backdrop? Should I get a big printout of just Grant and Sherman talking to each other?
Matthew says Civil War backdrop or bust.
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
That'd be kind of dope.
That would be good. Do we have one more question?
We do. This is from
new one.
Dave. Questions on Big Ten rivalries and band dynamics.
Wow.
Band
dynamics?
Greetings, Ryan and David. I've been a longtime listener and greatly appreciate your insights into college football. Your recent shift to cover the Big Ten is exciting, and I have a couple of questions related to this transition. Firstly, with the inclusion of 4 Pac-12 schools, how do you think the Ohio State-Michigan fans will be able to adjust to the change in their rivalry? Is this the first 6-way rivalry in college football? Which game will be the big game this year between these 6 Big Ten teams? Unfortunately, I'm expecting it to be Oregon-Ohio State. What will we refer to the lesser games each year in the rivalry? Low game?
Yeah, I don't think they want to be messed. The Ohio State-Michigan thing, it's hard to mess with that. Even a joking fashion. Like, they take that real serious.
Yeah.
When we did when we started our podcast, that's the one thing that said, you can't mess with that. We're like, we're not allowed to make jokes about it, so sorry. That's what the powers of be told us.
Who was that?
I don't know. I just made that up.
Yeah. Secondly, I'm curious about the dynamics of the marching bands. USC, Oregon, and UCLA have some of the top bands in the Pac-12, but how will they adapt to being considered the weakest bands in the Big Ten? Will UCLA and Oregon bands survive given their limited funding, especially since they struggled to travel even within the Pac-12? How will they manage cross-country travel? Also, do you think Oregon will continue using their track suits and face the ridicule, or will they adjust to the more formal band culture of the Big Ten?
Someone told me that, like, there's like a minimum.
Yeah, Big Ten band culture is real.
It is real. And like USC does, like they send their full band to Notre Dame. Like, Notre Dame doesn't even bring the full band out to Los Angeles. They're kind of used to doing that stuff, so they're probably fitting okay with all that because they take that stuff real serious. I don't know. What do you think about the other schools? Like, Stanford would not be a good fit band dynamic-wise.
I think Washington is a good fit. They kind of do Big Ten bandy stuff already. Oregon, USC, and UCLA are going to be some of the worst bands in the league probably immediately.
Interesting.
Whether they get serious about it is going to be the big question. I don't know that they will. I don't think UCLA is going to change. They haven't changed their band stuff in, I don't know, 30 years. So I doubt they're going to change now.
It'll be interesting to see.
Thank you for continuing to deliver such engaging content. I look forward to hearing your thoughts on these topics. P.S. Have you considered a bunch of Nebraska classy and Minnesota nice college football fans is exactly what L.A. Transit needs to make the final push to make it great? Lived in the area in the early 90s and again in 2010. In the 2010s, it is making great progress. Best regards, Dave.
Transit?
Yeah, if we get them on the train.
Well, I think the Olympics is what's going to push that the most, if it does anything.
Mm.
We got to get it. We don't have it to the airport right now. The train doesn't go to the airport. So you got to do that. They got to fix the airport, which they do every Olympics. They do something to the airport. Maybe not the 1932 one, but 84, they'd fixed a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff is broken. They're trying to fix it.
I mean, to do legitimate transit in L.A., you need to go back in time about 80 years, fight off the oil companies and the car companies, and keep all the trolley cars.
Yeah.
And if you don't do that, well, sorry, you're screwed. I mean, right now, what it would take is a massive, massive undertaking to basically go probably subterranean everywhere.
It'd be
try
really
to do a
tough.
Subway.
It'd be really tough.
Because
it's
otherwise,
just such a spread out city too that it's there's some point to point stuff, but you're far away from.
I've always thought that's bullshit. That's an argument from oil companies and car companies because
I've tried to take the train. It's like, okay, you're like 15 minutes drive away from one, and then where you want to go is 15 minutes drive from there. It's like, well, I'm just going to drive. Like, what's the point?
Well, I guess that's my point. Is there's literally what we have to certain areas is like a single train that goes up a single track and it goes to a single area. Whereas if you look at like New York and all these other places that have legitimate trains, it's, you know, they've got little spurs that go off in different directions. And there's, you know, lots of different things you can take to go different places. You know, LA used to have not exactly that, but used to actually have a transit system.
Yeah.
It just that got blown up by major corporate interests. So, you know, until, I don't know, until they invent a time machine, I think LA is what it is. You're going to have the one line, and if it can go to the airport, that's great, because then
yeah,
you can,
we need that.
Then you can get from, you know, whatever. You can get from the, if you can just get from Union Station to the airport and back, like, that's a real win.
Yeah, right now you can't even do that. They're going to add one. I think they're going to add a station to, like, the Hollywood Bowl. So, like, that's a nightmare parking place. Like, that would be good.
Yeah, it's a nightmare to park anywhere in Hollywood. But it's a nightmare to park a lot of places in L.A. Like, if you go anywhere
– Westwood's terrible.
I mean, it's all bad. Westwood is actually better because you can – if you know what you're doing, there's at least residential stuff nearby where they don't have permitted parking, so you can
– Or you get the handicap stickers, yeah, you know, like the football team.
But if you're going, like, mid-Wilshire or – yeah. but if you're going, like, mid-Wilshire north, if you're going to, like, Hollywood, if you're going, you know, onto Sunset, if you're trying to do anything that's, like, quintessentially L.A., not only is there no public transit that goes there, you can't park. So best of luck.
Yeah. West Texas Mike, really kind of you, David, to have bought Ryan all that USC stuff to decorate the studio with. Would have been nice for Ryan to have returned the favor.
I agree, West Texas Mike. It's just this kind of giving culture exists at UCLA. It just doesn't among USC people. And that's the sad thing. I wish it did. I wish Ryan was the kind of guy who woke up every Wednesday morning and was like, you know, I'm going to prepare meals for older people and deliver them. And he's just not. And that's,
I don't prepare them, I only deliver.
Yeah, and that's just a sad thing for all of us. I wish he had more of a giving nature.
Matthew says, have Purdue fans/alumni build us new trains. It's their whole deal.
Yeah. Can we make this partnership work for us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Purdue, you kind of stink at football.
You're good at engineering.
Bring some trains.
Let's do two things. Build some trains. And also, you could probably do some urban planning, right? That's sort of like engineering, right?
I think, aren't we past the urban? Like, we became urban sprawl. Like, that's...
We've been planned.
We're the definition of LA is just the urban sprawl just kept growing and growing, and then you're so spread out.
Yeah.
Like, San Francisco probably would have done that, but you're like, you got the bay everywhere, so they're just, like, landlocked. So, it's easier. You can stop off on the BART and...
I don't know. Have you been up there? It's pretty sprawly.
Yeah, but you're, like, very limited land-wise. Like, you can't you know,
I mean, build. But what's LA? You know, I mean, do you count Riverside as a sprawl from LA?
Yeah, but like the going up to the valley, like once you get over the hill.
Yeah, but those are all separate cities, or a lot of them are.
But it's still part of the sprawl. I don't know.
Yeah, but like, is, I don't know, what's part of San Francisco's sprawl is like, got, I don't know, Fremont is.
But that's like you have to cross a bridge, you know, like
oh, if you have to cross a bridge, it's not part of your sprawl anymore.
I mean, yeah, like it's
I think it's part of your sprawl if people are coming in from there to work in your city, right? Yeah, I so guess technically Sacramento is part of San Francisco's sprawl.
I guess it does make it harder. It's like a fire break, like you got this.
I mean, is bay. Lancaster and Palmdale, are they part of LA's sprawl?
I don't, that's pretty far out.
Yeah, but people come in there for work.
Are you gonna, like, I've thought about this, Olympics comes to LA.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't here in 84. You were around.
Uh-huh.
But you, no, wait. Yeah, you were around, right?
In 84?
No, you were not born.
I was not even born.
Yes. Okay. You don't remember this. I wasn't here, but I was like a 13-year-old or whatever. Do you think it's safe to get the hell out? Because it might be insane. Like, I think I could rent my house for like probably a lot of money for a month and just go somewhere else for a while. Go to Vegas or something. I think a lot of people are going to do that. They're just going to get the hell out for a month.
It's not a bad idea. When is that? It's going to be in like late July, early August?
2028, yeah.
Yeah, might be worth it. Worth
either going. Like embrace it and like go to a whole bunch of events, or just like I'm out. Like
I think, I mean, if I'm being real, I will just ignore it's happening like I am currently.
We're losing, by the way. Speaking of patriotic stuff, like, our basketball team, which has like a lot of good players, is losing.
Ryan, can I tell you,
Serbia?
Can I tell you how much of the Olympics I've watched?
How much?
One half of one women's soccer game, I think, on the first day.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't really watched any soccer, but I've watched some. I don't watch a ton. I like to do the live. I want to see it live. And there's been a lot of stuff live. Like, they're putting it on like USA, and I don't have Peacock, but. I think before, NBC was just like saving everything and then putting on their primetime shows. And I was like, screw you. Like, I can read what's going on Twitter. But it doesn't look good for us right now. I think I don't see what the score is.
Well, they're shooting the three pretty well.
Serbia's shoot 15 of 30 from three. That is bad. Are you saying we're not playing like tough defense on the perimeter? Is that what you're saying, David, as a basketball fan? And they spell Serbia weird on their jerseys.
I think they spell it maybe the way it's supposed to be spelled.
I never understood.
But there is a J in there, and that does not feel right.
Yeah. We're down 14. That's not good. Yeah. Mm. Good stuff. All right. Well, I guess we could probably end it here. Do we have anything else?
No. No. We've got nothing else.
I had one quick thing for you. It's not football.
Mm.
TNT had like Star Wars marathon stuff going on. So sure. 8 and 9, I forget what they're called, but
The Last Jedi and Rise of Skywalker.
Okay, so I think I watched most,
which was maybe one of the worst movies ever made.
Okay, so yeah, which one did you like and which one did you hate?
The Last Jedi is a good movie. Rise of Skywalker is one of the worst movies ever made. Rise of Skywalker is 9, the last one.
Okay, the last one you hated. The 8 one was the one where they kill Snape or whatever.
They kill, what's his name?
Snape.
Snoke.
Oh, sorry.
Snape is in Harry Potter.
My bad. Okay, Snoke. Okay. So, yeah, that was cool. Like, that was a cool battle scene.
Visually, it was a much, like, it was a prettier movie. Like, that, like, the whole visuals of that whole scene where they're fighting the guys in the red, too.
Yeah.
Like, it just looks cool as hell. And then when they're on the, what's the planet at the end? The one with the salt? I think it's whatever it's called. That visually is very cool too,
where Luke like transports himself and you're supposed to notice that his feet don't make the salt come up and see red, and
Yeah.
Okay. So that yeah, I thought watching it back, I'm like, I kind of like that one better than the last one. Well, the last one was basically like, okay, I know we've done the Death Star thing a million times.
What if we make a million of them?
Let's make a million Death Stars.
Yeah. And well, it's just nonsensical. Like,
and you bring Palpatine back and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and it was just, I mean, if you remember, like, Last Jedi had all that, like, basically a bunch of people very negative on it for a whole host of very stupid reasons. And because of that, it was like the last movie responded to those people by basically giving in to what they wanted. And so then you ended up with, like, all these callbacks and shit where it's just like, this sucks. And it just makes – I mean, it's supposed to be a literal galaxy, like, of all these different things. It just makes it all so small. You don't want to make it feel small. You want it to make it feel big. You want it to feel like it's, you know, an entire universe you're exploring
here. Yeah, well, the whole rebellion was in a cave. Like, it's like, oh, there's, like, 10 of us left, and we're, like, trying to find a back way out. Like, that was –
Well, that
it seemed kind of dumb.
No, I didn't mind that. That was in the eighth movie.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, but like that's supposed to show. Yeah, I thought it's extreme, and also it's like, I think they were painted into some corners because of what they did with the story in Episode 7, The Force Awakens, because they basically just reset the. Again, this all comes down to J.J. Abrams sucks really bad and doesn't know how to make anything original. And so it's all just a rhyming thing about some other piece of content that he likes. So for Force Awakens, okay, well, here's the thing. The Rebellion won at the end of Return of the Jedi. They blew up the second Death Star. They blew up Palpatine. Vader was dead, right?
Yeah.
So now they're in power. And instead of exploring that, doing anything interesting about that, anything at all, they just reset the playing field to now there's a new empire. We're going to call it the First Order. They're also way more powerful than the Rebellion. And the Rebellion is now called the Resistance, but it's the same thing. And there's only like 100 of them. And it's like, okay, what the fuck?
What happened to all the power?
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, it's because J.J. Abrams doesn't know how to do any stories. He doesn't know how to do original stories. And so he was doing A New Hope. So he just did it again. And then I think his idea for the second movie was we're just going to do Empire again. But that put the guy who did the second movie in kind of a bind because, well, they just showed that the, you know, the Resistance isn't that big and they're desperate. So what am I supposed to do with that?
Right.
And so he went and that's like the scene at the end of that movie is not them escaping. It's that kid, right? The kid with the broom.
Yeah, with the broom.
Like, and the whole idea was that was trying to expand the universe again, right? To make it so, okay, maybe there's going to be some other storyline we're going to explore here. Maybe it's not this kid, but maybe there's, you know, this has sparked something in the galaxy. No, no, no.
We never saw that kid again.
Never saw that kid again. Never picked up that thread at all in the last movie. It's just... what if there were a million Death Stars and they were all on Star Destroyers and they blew up stuff and we had to go fight them?
Yeah.
Because Palpatine.
I remember reading a book. I don't know what official or unofficial storylines, but like a long, long time ago. And it was going to be like – it basically was supposed to be like Episode 7. And I'm sure there's multiple books, different authors and stuff. But it was basically like – the Empire became the Resistance. Like they were – now they were trying to rebuild their stuff.
So the expanded universe, like the stuff from like the 90s, like all those books and shit.
It might have been where like there was like a
I read Empire a bunch of those as a kid.
Yeah, they had like a great like general or whatever, and he was
Grand
like,
Admiral Thrawn,
and he was trying. And yeah, he was like good at like strategic. So he like the rebels had way more ships, but he was like, you know, this kind of pincer move or whatever, and like he would like kind of start to build the Empire back.
If they had just gotten their egos in check and just built off of those books, they would have had much better storylines. They didn't need to take everything, but they could have taken a lot from it because the idea was essentially, well, you blew up the second Death Star, but there's still a lot of Empire left. Like there's still all these admirals and generals and they're going to do all this stuff. So it's going to be a cleanup operation for decades. And that's what it turned into. And then they could have used a lot of that. And then had it be like, you know, 25 years later, whatever, Leia's in charge of the galaxy or whatever, but there's corrupting influences and they're going to take over. And essentially, instead of remaking A New Hope, remake The Phantom Menace better and do it like, oh, there's some internal rot. There's some problems. There's some things going wrong because we didn't get X, Y, or Z taken care of in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
And that would have been a more interesting story. It would have been something new. You could have done something different. And instead, they chose to do something stupid. And in the process, everyone talks about, you know, Luke Skywalker's character got ruined. And it absolutely did not. I mean, Luke Skywalker's character is a whiny little...
He kind of stayed that way, yeah.
And he's kind of a whiny little guy. And, you know, I think where his arc actually landed was he showed growth, you know. Once again, he, you know, well, I'm not going to go there because my X-Wing is literally, you know, sunken under the ocean, but I'm going to sacrifice myself to do this. Like, that's, you know, nobility. That's Buddhist. That's all the shit that Star Wars is based off of.
I don't like that.
The character they ruined was Han Solo.
Yeah.
Totally ruined. Because all you did was take all of his learned, you know, I've developed, I've become a new person from the original trio, like where he's become this non-scoundrel, you know, leader of the rebellion, all this kind of shit, to, oh, yeah, I just went back to that because my son left and I'm sad and that's it. And I'm going to go hang out with Chewie on the Falcon.
The whole son left thing. I think at this point you're good at not letting, like, your star pupils turn. Like, I think at this point you'd have to, like, figure that out.
Yeah.
And the fact you can't just keep losing that way. So I don't buy the like Ben, like I think you'd be all hands on deck. So you make sure you're not taking your only kid Jedi to the dark side kind of thing.
Well, and I mean, honestly, like a huge part of it was, and this is part of the problem with them all gotten very old, is they left all the most interesting things unsaid. Like the 20 years in between, like all this stuff. Like, and that's, I mean, I think in the fullness of time, we're going to get remakes of all these movies. And then hopefully they have a little bit more ambition than just remaking them. But, you know, instead of taking 20 years off between, you know, Empire and Phantom Menace or whatever it was, they do some kind of continuous story. Because they could remake the original Star Wars right now with... Essentially, Ewan McGregor is probably getting old enough that he could play Alec Guinness's character or in the next 10 years, probably. But I think you could do that. And I think it could you could fix some of the story problems that were not necessarily. Look, I mean, George Lucas messed up the prequels, but I think he did fine with the original three. But the story problems that were created by not making any new movies between whatever, 83 and 99.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we filled in. I looked at our live numbers, and it's actually been up since we're talking football. So, talking nonsense after talking football,
yeah.
The numbers went up. So I don't know why that is, but people like when
people got good national anthem analysis, and they got good Star Wars analysis, and they got good public transit analysis.
I'm glad you.
What more could you want from your college football show?
I'm glad you said that you didn't like the last one, because I was like, when I watched them both again, I don't remember a lot. I just like, oh, whatever. And it was like, oh yeah, the last one kind of stunk. But the second
Rise of Skywalker is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
It's pretty bad.
Like, it's incoherent, and it made sense because it's written by the same guy that wrote. Did you ever watch Batman versus Superman?
No, I thought that was dumb. The concept,
the most profoundly incoherent movie I've ever watched, and it was written by the same guy.
Ah, okay. Yeah, the concept just seemed dumb, so I didn't do it.
Yep.
All right, well, let's wrap things up. For David Woods, I am Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.